to smile. There were many times that Sabrina fancied the dog understood humans. He appeared to follow conversations around him and could anticipate her moods. Why would he not have formed an opinion of Mr. Enright's character? If one was fanciful, and she could be, it didn't seem a stretch of the imagination. "Well then, keep watch," she said, "and wish me luck. You know how difficult father can be." Rolf's brown eyes said that he did. She left the stables. Mrs. Patton was in the hall, throwing her shawl over her shoulders, when Sabrina entered the back door. The cook already had her wool cap on her head. Once she had the dinner made, she didn't linger unless she was needed. She was 3 years older than Sabrina, the wife of the local cooper's apprentice, and they had 5 hungry sons under the age of 12 waiting at home to be fed. Sabrina and her father could serve themselves, and the cook would clean the kitchen in the morning.
"There you are," Mrs. Patton said in cheery greeting. "Your luncheon went well."
"Fair enough," Sabrina murmured. "How is father?"
"In good spirits. I heard him humming."
That was unusual, although he had been in a pleasant mood the past week. She wondered when he'd given Mrs. Bosley the ring. "Has he had any visitors?" Sabrina wanted to know if Mrs. Bosley had come running with news of their confrontation at the luncheon.
"No, he has been alone all day. He's barely taken time to have a bite to eat."
Good. Sabrina would have a chance to talk sense into him. "Is there any broth?" she asked the cook.
"Aye, a stewed chicken. There should be plenty."
"Why?" "We have a sick parishioner," Sabrina answered. That wasn't truly a lie. Mr. Enright was physically in the parish at this moment, and he was not well. "I thought to take some broth to him."
"Och, who is it?"
Mrs. Patton said with a touch of alarm. "Do I know him?" Sabrina thought fast as she removed her hat and pelisse and hung them on the hook on the wall next to her father's. "I don't actually know the name. Mrs. Kinnean told me of him. I'll deliver the broth to her." Mrs. Patton accepted her explanation.
"Well, take some fresh bread as well. I baked plenty, since I won't be in on the morrow. Did you remember that?"
"Yes, you were going to Pitlochry with your husband. Don't worry about us. We shall be fine. I hope you enjoy the day."
"Thank you,"
Mrs. Patton said, a beaming smile of anticipation splitting her face.
"I will see you then."
With a nod, she was gone. And Sabrina was alone with her father. She faced the study. When she used the room, she usually kept the door open, but her father liked the door closed. She didn't hear humming. Her father had always been a distant parent, an aloof one. Her mother had been the person she'd turned to for guidance, and yet her father's wishes and dictates were always considered first. Her mother had insisted. She did not like confrontation in any form, and over the years, Sabrina had followed suit. Then again, her mother could not have imagined her father chasing the likes of the widow Bosley. Sabrina knocked on the door.
"Yes?"
her father's baritone voice asked, the sound abrupt. She entered the room. Her father sat at his desk by the window, scribbling away on a sheaf of papers, his glasses pinching his nose. He did his own copying or else gave the work to Sabrina. There was no money to pay for a secretary. He didn't acknowledge Sabrina's presence. He often expected her to stand and wait. He'd explained once that it taught her patience and discipline. In the past, Sabrina would have cooled her heels while studying the tomes on philosophy and law lined upon the shelves of the wall nearest her. Today was different. "I enjoyed the ladies' quarterly meeting today." He didn't even raise a brow.
"That's pleasant," he murmured as he removed the top page of his stack, one covered with his small, neat handwriting, and set it aside for the ink to dry. He dipped his nib into the ink bottle and began writing on the next page.
"I sat with someone outside of my usual acquaintance. Mrs. Bosley."
The pen stopped moving. He began writing again.
"Interesting," he said.
Sabrina frowned.
"You do not act like a man in love."
The pen was placed aside. He looked up, meeting her eye for the first time since she'd entered the room. Sabrina understood what the widow would see in him. The Davidson men were a handsome lot, even the older ones. They were tall and had regal bearing. Drinking and hard living had damaged the uncle's looks, but her father still had a clear eye, a square jaw, a sense of dignity, and most of his greying hair.
She says you have asked her to marry you. Her tone was clipped, her feelings on the subject very apparent. Her father's glance shifted to the door. The corners of his mouth turned grave. For a second, Sabrina could imagine him denying Mrs. Bosley's claim. And then he nodded.
I have.
That was not the answer she wanted.
Why was I completely unaware of this?
She demanded, betrayal closing her throat.
She said you had been courting her for months. In fact, everyone in the room today acted as if they knew of your liaison as well. That is, everyone but me.
He had the good grace to act discomfited.
Sabrina.
One word. Her name. He said it as if it were an explanation. It wasn't.
Why?
He frowned at the stack of papers.
I didn't want to upset you. I knew you would not be happy.
Should I be? Do you remember all of the disparaging things you said about her when she was carrying on madly with my uncle?
She leaned her hands on his desk.
You were so disapproving, Father, and now I learn from her that the two of you will marry. Do you know what she asked me? She wanted to know if I was going to give her any difficulties. She made it quite clear that she expected to be the mistress of this household.
For a second their eyes met, then he looked away. He didn't speak. He didn't answer her.
How could you, Father? How could you replace my mother with this woman? You know what she is.
His face turned red. He came to his feet.
You don't know her. If you did, you would not be so harsh in your judgment.
I haven't had time to judge her. I rarely even thought of her. This is all a surprise to me.
He came around the desk.
I know this may seem sudden to you, but I've thought it out. This is what I want. I want to marry Lillian.
Sabrina couldn't believe what she was hearing.
If it was what you truly wanted, why did you not tell me you were courting her? Why has it been a secret?
I was trying to be sensitive to you, he said. You seemed so distraught after your mother died.
So did you, Father.
I was.
His voice broke off on the last word. His gaze dropped to the floor. He took a step away, and Sabrina pressed, believing he was listening to her, that he would reconsider what she was certain was a hasty decision.
We both feel her loss, she said. It hasn't been that long since she left us, not quite 2 years. I'm surprised you think to remarry so quickly.
Quickly,
he echoed. He looked up.
2 years is comparable to a decade for a man my age. Furthermore, Millie was sick a long time, Sabrina, longer than you knew. I have been without a wife for decades, and I was loyal. Most men would not have been.
I understand the sacrifices you made, Father, she said, her words terse. Mother's illness was not easy for any of us.
Except I'm a man, Sabrina. A man has needs.
Needs?
He raised a hand.
You wouldn't understand.
Oh, I do understand, she answered. Years of grief and mourning held tightly in her chest were suddenly unleashed with anger. Contrary to what Mrs. Bosley thinks, I am not naive. I know what attraction she holds for you, and I know how long Mother was ill. I had been at her beck and call since she first took to her bed. I spent night and day with her. She never asked you for anything other than 15 minutes of your time each afternoon. I tended her, I bathed her, I fed her, I gave her all that I had. And now you are telling me, I don't understand. And because of what you believe you want, what is due you, I must grovel to the notorious Widow Bosley. Really, Father, if you were going to call on someone, could you not have had higher standards?
She is a good woman,
he began in his paramour's defence, but Sabrina would have none of it. His affair with Mrs. Bosley had released a simmering cauldron of resentment inside her.
She is the earthiest of creatures. She flaunted her liaison with my uncle. She bragged she would be his next countess. Why you would call on such a feather-brained creature, I understand. You do have needs.
She had to draw out that last word. She couldn't help herself, and she was growing more agitated and less wise as she spoke.
But you gave her mother's ring. Mrs. Bosley can have everything else in this house, but that was mine. It belonged to me.
Actually, it belonged to me. It is my property.
The coldness in his voice whipped around her. His manner had changed. He went from being somewhat self-conscious to the man who could hold others' fates in his hands.
"Your only purpose here," he continued, "is to do what I expect of you."
There had been a time when Sabrina could have been cowed into submission. That time was past. She'd given up too much. She'd sacrificed. She'd done what had been needed. Her hands clenched into fists at her side. She gathered all the Davidson pride in her being.
"I am not chattel. I have a purpose and a right to an opinion."
"You do not."
If he had struck her, he could not have hurt her more deeply than with those three words. Her mind reeled. She had believed her father felt some indebtedness toward her, if not paternal acceptance. She had not considered herself an unwitting slave with no will of her own. She understood that as a daughter of the house, she had no rights under the law, but she had trusted that her father saw her as a person with intelligence. As if realizing he'd hurt her, he tempered his tone to say,
"You are wrong about Lillian. She is a sensitive soul. She understands loss. She knows how I feel."
That statement stunned Sabrina. He continued,
"I admit it. I had thought the worst of her, but after listening to her story, to her concerns..."
Probably while considering her ample bosom, Sabrina couldn't help thinking.
"I came to know her in a way that was not based upon gossip and innuendo. You should appreciate that, Sabrina. You're always railing about the gossips in the valley. You yourself would champion Lillian if she knew what I know about her."
"You and the Widow Bosley are sharing a bed. You are lovers."
The blunt statement came out of Sabrina's mouth before she could question its wisdom, and once it was out, she'd not call it back. After all, if he had no respect for her, why was she tiptoeing around him? It also felt good to speak forthrightly to him.
"You can dress it up, Father, but the understanding she offers is as old as what Circe presented to shipwrecked sailors."
His mouth dropped open at her effrontery, but he recovered enough to say almost primly,
"I am shocked by your attitude, daughter."
"I am shocked by your behaviour," she shot back. "So when you told me you had business around the valley, or you were travelling to Edinburgh, you were actually calling on Lillian, correct?"
A look crossed his face, one she couldn't read. She pressed.
"You have proudly built your reputation on honesty, and yet you are not honest with me."
He clasped his hands behind his back, his shoulders rigid, unyielding, his jaw set. There was nothing he could say in his defence. Sabrina attempted to appeal to whatever love he had for her.
"And what is to become of me, Father? Where is my place in this new household you are creating?"
There was a heavy beat of silence. Then he said,
"As my wife, I will expect Lillian to receive all that is due to her."
Her heart dropped, because now she understood. She felt quite ridiculous, actually. Any authority Sabrina believed she had carried had been an illusion. Male that he was, her father would let Mrs. Bosley take her mother's place and also determine what was best for Sabrina. Her life stretched bleakly in front of her as a long, lonely road. And there was nothing more for her. Charitable works and playing the pianoforte for other people to dance were how she would be remembered if anyone thought of her at all. She turned to the door. There wasn't anything left to say. She felt empty, abandoned. She thought of Mr. Enright. Now was probably the best time to mention their guest. She'd wait a bit. However, she had made a promise to Mrs. Kinnean. "One other matter," she said softly, unable to meet his eye. "Mrs. Kinnean is concerned for her husband's welfare."
"His welfare?"
Her father's interest sharpened dramatically, as if he was relieved with the change of subject. "He went to Edinburgh on business. He should have returned days ago, but she hasn't heard a word from him."
"She hasn't?"
her father said.
"Did you know he was gone? The deacon spoke at services last week, but I had not realised Mr. Kinnean was travelling."
"Yes, I had some knowledge of his trip,"
her father responded, sounding distracted.
"Well, he's only late returning a few days," Sabrina emphasised. "Still, his wife is concerned. Mr. Kinnean went to visit his uncle, who is the rector at St. Jude's Kirk in Edinburgh's Grass Market.
I said you might be willing to send a note to the uncle just to inquire that all is as it should be. I hope that was all right. He frowned at her now as if she had grown two heads, and he couldn't comprehend a word she was saying. But then he seemed to recover and murmured,
Of course. St. Jude's.
Ebenezer Kinnean is his uncle's name. Would you like me to write it down for you? He dismissed her with a curt wave of his hand.
I know him.
Sabrina frowned. Mrs. Kinnean's request seemed to have grabbed hold of her father's mind. He stood as if uncertain of which way to turn and what to do. Father, is there something the matter? He gave a start, then barked.
Why'd you say that?
Sabrina blinked at his abruptness. The Reverend Kinnean's absence seems to have upset you. For a second her father appeared shamefaced. Then he fired back with a burst of anger.
You say the man is missing and that his wife is worried. Why would I not be concerned? He is my friend. Or has my offer for Mrs. Bosley so completely tainted your opinion of me that you can't believe anything good of me?
Sabrina held a hand up as if to ward him off. I meant no insult. I just, well... She broke off. She couldn't very well chastise him for caring more for a friend than he did his own daughter. Not if she wanted peace. After all was said and done, her mother had taught her well. Her father's needs were to be considered first, and she had already pushed him to his limit, for now. Sabrina knew she'd revisit the topic of Mrs. Bosley with him. She could not afford to lose this battle. I'm also worried, she finished, lamely. But he was no longer paying attention to her. Instead, he had moved over to his desk and sat in his chair, but he did not pick up his pen. No, he just stared at the stack of papers with unseeing eyes, as if he was working something out in his mind. Sabrina lingered by the door. Father?
His head jerked up. Go on about your tasks, he ordered, sounding preoccupied. I'm fine.
He picked up his pen and began fiddling with his papers. The curt dismissal did not sit well with Sabrina, not after the argument. He would probably explain everything to Mrs. Bosley. And then she remembered that she had her own secret, Mr. Enright. She would talk to her father about him later, after dinner, when he'd had a glass of whiskey and mellowed a bit. Mr. Enright would be content for the moment, provided she served him a portion of Mrs. Patton's chicken broth. I need to see to supper, she said. Her father didn't reply. He acted as if he hadn't heard her. Sabrina didn't understand his mood, but then, to be honest, since her mother's death, there were times the two of them acted like strangers. Her best course was to prepare their meal and see to her patient. She marched into the kitchen and crossed to the fire, where Mrs. Patton had left several pots hanging on hooks. The bread baked for the day was cooling on a good-sized trestle table that took up the centre of the kitchen. It was here Sabrina and her father ate, instead of the dining room. There was a pantry in the far corner, and the chairs for the table were lined up against the wall. The broth was scalding hot. It should have been removed from the fire's heat some time ago. Sabrina picked up a cloth and lifted the pot off the hook. She'd just set it on a marble slab on the hearth to cool when she heard the back door slam shut. She listened, and she didn't hear another sound. Had her father left? She went to the hall. No one had come in and the study door was open. The room was empty. Her first panicked thought was that her father had gone out to the stables for whatever reason and would discover Mr. Enright. She dashed to the door. She was right. He'd just gone through the garden gate and was taking long strides toward the stables. Sabrina flew out the door. She hurried down the step, scampered as fast as she could with any dignity toward the stable, her mind awhirl with a plausible story about Mr. Enright's presence. And that is when she came to a halt. She couldn't tell her father she'd just come across a man in a bothy and brought him home. In the mood her father was in right now, he would never let the man in the house. She could tell him Mr. Enright was a friend of someone else she'd come across today and that person had asked the Davidsons to keep their friend for a bit. That wouldn't work either. Her father might ask the name of the person, and then what would she say? Her father came riding Rayner out of the stables at a high gallop. He even slapped his reins against the bay's side, urging him to go faster. The horse was happy to oblige. Mud and stones were kicked up into the air as his huge hooves dug in and surged forward. Wait! Sabrina ran to the gate, wanting to know where he was going, but her father didn't stop. Indeed, he acted as if he didn't see her. In the blink of an eye, he galloped across the bridge into Aberfeldy and was gone from view, heading in the direction of Borlick, home of the widow Bosley. Sabrina stared after him, stunned by his abrupt abandonment. He hadn't said a word to her about leaving. Her father had never done that before. And if she had needed a demonstration of exactly where she fell in his affection when compared with the widow, she had received it. Within the half hour, her father and Mrs. Bosley would be cozying up together and giggling over how innocent his daughter was. Sabrina reached down, grabbed a handful of stones, dirt, and new grass, and tossed them at the road her father had just taken. She was furious, and feeling more than a little betrayed. She hated her life. Caring for her mother had not been easy, but at least she'd had a purpose and reason for being. Now she had nothing. Even her cousins had married and gone off on their own. Why had the Almighty given her a keen mind and common sense if all she was supposed to do was arrange flowers and dust tabletops? A frantic whimper interrupted her temper tantrum. Rolf had come out into the stable yard. He stood in indecision, as if wanting to cross to her, but afraid to leave the building. He whimpered again. "What is it?" she asked, walking toward him. He disappeared inside the stable, then returned to stick his head out to be certain she still followed, and her thoughts went immediately to Mr. Enright. She lifted her skirts and began running. Satisfied she understood the urgency, Rolf ran ahead to the pony cart. He whimpered, pacing as if anxious she check on her patient. Mr. Enright was curled up in the bottom of the cart, sprawled exactly as she had left him. But he was quiet, too quiet, and his skin had the look and texture of wax. He didn't even move when Rolf jumped against the cart, making it rock to and fro, and Sabrina's immediate thought was that he was dead. Chapter 5. Panic propelled Sabrina into the cart. The vehicle bounced beneath her as she scrambled over the bench so that she could check him closely. Dumpling, always curious and in the stall next door, put his head over the wall as if he had something to say about the goings-on in the stable. Rolf whined and paced as if he thought he should be doing something. Mr. Enright's skin was still hot, but that did not always mean life. Fever had so consumed old Mrs. McDavid that her skin had been heated to the touch for a good 15 minutes after her death. Sabrina searched for his pulse in the vein along his neck and listened hard for sounds of his breathing. His heart beat, and then Rolf jumped right on top of him. The dog had leaped right into the cart, landing on top of the man's waist and shoulders. He stuck his cold, black nose right into the crook of his neck. Mr. Enright jerked as the dog's weight squeezed the air through his lungs. He gasped, as if needing more air and unable to receive it, but he was alive, albeit just barely. "Move, Rolf," Sabrina ordered, shoving her dog out of the cart with both hands. Rolf didn't take offence at being dumped to the ground. He sat up, his tail wagging, as if he understood he'd performed a good service. Her patient had settled back into his fetal position, his breathing laboured but strong, as if he'd momentarily given up but now continued the struggle to survive. His dark hair was pressed against his head in damp rings. Shadows emphasised the hollows of his face. If she didn't act quickly, she could lose him. "I'm moving you," she said to him. "I'm taking you into the house." She started climbing out of the cart as she spoke. "When we reach the back step, I will need your help. I can't move you alone, and no one else is here." Her father would not approve. She should have spoken to him, but it was too late now, and she wasn't about to keep Mr. Enright a moment longer out here in the stables. He needed good care. Besides, her father was already so annoyed with her, he'd charged out of the house. Carting home a sick stranger would be just one more thing about her that irritated him. "He and Mrs. Bosley can discuss this transgression as well," she muttered under her breath, as she picked the cart up by the shafts and began pulling it out of the stall. It wasn't difficult to pull, just awkward, and she decided to see if she could guide it all the way to the back door without dealing with Dumpling. For his part, the pony watched her efforts with interest, as if wondering if she found being hitched to the cart as much of a chore as he did. Rolf trotted along beside her. The dog's interest in Mr. Enright's well-being was very curious to Sabrina. She could only surmise that the man must be a halfway decent sort if Rolf gave his approval. She hoped that was true. After all, she knew nothing about Mr. Enright. Why? He could be some brigand. But he didn't seem to be such a character. If anything, he struck her as a man who'd had a measure of bad luck. There were telltale signs, from the good leather of his boots with their run-down heels to the quality linen of his filthy and sweat-stained shirt. He needed some kindness. Offering kindness could help her as well. The cart's height fit perfectly the top back step. She propped the door open. Now came the hard part, physically moving him. She'd opened the cart door. All he had to do was step from the vehicle into the house. Simple, really, if one were conscious. "Mr. Enright," Sabrina called, shaking his shoulder. "Mr. Enright, you must rouse yourself. Please, I can't take you inside without your help." He didn't budge. There was no movement, not even the flicker of an eyelash. She could ask for help from a neighbour, but for some reason she was reluctant to do so. Perhaps because of the promise Mr. Enright had extracted from her. Perhaps because she felt her father should be informed first, before she mentioned her patient to others. Or perhaps because of her own stubbornness. Sabrina rarely asked for assistance when she was tending her mother. She didn't like to bother others, and, yes, her pride was involved as well. She was independent by nature. Doing a task herself was easier than letting others pry into her business. She rushed up to her bedroom and pulled the counterpane off her bed. She took it downstairs and spread it on the floor by the door. "Mr. Enright," she called again, this time shoving his shoulder since he hadn't reacted to her gentle shaking. "I need your help." Nothing. No response at all. "Please, Mr. Enright." He seemed to settle in deeper. Finally, she took a lesson from Rolf. She took both hands and all of her weight and pounced on him. Mr. Enright woke, his glassy eyes opening. "Stand up," she ordered, as she lifted his arm and placed it around her shoulder. This man was solid, weak, but muscular. "Please stand," she encouraged, and to her blessed relief, he did. He unfolded himself and, with her aid, stood in the rickety cart. For a second they wobbled, then she pushed him forward. He grabbed the side of the door and stepped inside the house. She jumped after him. "You can lie on the blanket," she said. "I'll be able to drag you to the stairs." Mr. Enright half turned to her and stared, as if trying to make sense of what she was saying. Then he began a lurching walk down the hall. Sabrina was ecstatic. This was better than she had hoped. They managed to reach the stairs. "All right," she said. "Let us climb them, one at a time." He shot her a look that said he thought her quite mad and sat on the stairs like a stubborn toddler who could not take one step more. He leaned his shoulder against the wall. For a second she debated leaving him here. She looked around the rooms off the hall. The dining room was one of the smallest rooms in the house, and the table, chairs and sideboard took up any floor space that could accommodate a man of his size, nor would he fit in the tight space between the foot of the stairs and the front door. She could fashion a comfortable bed for him on the floor of the sitting room. Her pianoforte was in one corner, and there were chairs for conversation by the front window, but they could be moved. However, Sabrina didn't want her father to walk in the door and see Mr. Enright until after she'd had a chance to explain his presence. So, how to guide him up the stairs and to the back bedroom that was reserved for guests. Mr. Enright solved her conundrum by turning on his own and half-crawling, half-climbing the stairs. She had to step lively to catch up with him. Nor was he truly conscious. A part of him was acting on instinct. He trusted her because he had no choice. He could not fend for himself. At the top of the stairs, he didn't walk down the hall toward the guest bedroom by the attic door, but turned sharply to the right and trudged into her own bedroom. He fell face down upon her bed. Sabrina stood in the doorway, relief mixing with dismay. She had not had the difficulty she had anticipated carrying him up the stairs. However, he had chosen her bed. He could not stay there, and yet he appeared to have lost consciousness again. She walked to the bed. This room was her sanctuary, the one place in the house that was hers alone. The bed was a simple four-poster and could certainly bear Mr. Enright's weight. However, she was very particular about the pillows and the sheets. Mrs. Patten and her father always accused her of being fussy about wanting her sheets clean and fresh. She liked plump pillows, too. She added feathers as she found them to the three pillows until they were just the way she liked them, and she did not share, especially with someone who had his boots on her sheets. As if he read her thoughts, Mr. Enright rubbed his hairy face against the smooth pillowcase Sabrina had sewn and embroidered herself. He snuggled in deeper. And Sabrina's frustration rose to the top. "You can't stay here!" He didn't move. He probably hadn't heard her. However, if he could climb the stairs, then he could rouse himself to march down the hall. "Come!" she ordered, reaching for his arm to drag him out of the bed. He didn't move. Worse, the fever had hold of him again. If anything, he was hotter to the touch than he had been before. Sheets could be cleaned, but she was not going to let this man die in her bed. Oh, no. She flew across the room to her washstand and poured water into the basin. The water had been sitting all day and was just the right temperature. She carried the bowl over to the bed and set it on the nightstand before leaving to collect clean cloths from the linen press in the hall. Sabrina began to do what she could to cool him down. She pressed compresses to his forehead and his chest beneath his shirt. She had a good supply of herbs and ointments in her mother's medicinal chest. She prepared a herbal poultice that contained eucalyptus leaves to clear the lungs and bound it to his chest. She removed his boots. They were not difficult to pull off. Mr. Enright had obviously lost weight during his illness, or perhaps before. This alarmed her more than anything, that and the pasty colour of his skin. He might not have the resources to see him through his fever. She turned to rush downstairs for the broth she'd left cooling in the kitchen and was surprised to see Rolf standing in the bedroom doorway. The back door must still be open. The dog watched with an anxious eye. "He is not well, is he?" she said. Rolf did not wag his tail. When she went downstairs for the broth, Rolf walked into her bedroom and sat beside the bed. He had been there many times before. When he was a small pup, she'd let him sleep with her. She was not happy with her father's dictate that the dog stay outside, and she certainly was not going to order Rolf out now. A few minutes later, she returned with a tray holding a large bowl of good broth and a spoon. Sabrina had ladled food into many a patient, starting with her mother. The doctor from Pitlochry had claimed her mother would have died much earlier in her life, if not for Sabrina's care. She now followed her usual procedure. She sat on the bed, picking up Mr. Enright's huge head and resting it in her lap. "Eat," she encouraged him. "Come along now, swallow." Of course, he did not obey, and she feared he was already too close to death to be saved. Mac didn't know where he was. He had been travelling. No, floating, actually, through cavern-like halls with arched white doors lining the walls. The halls were connected with stone steps. Two steps here, four there, and the path, the only direction he could go, seemed to lead deeper and deeper into a place he did not understand. The sound of rushing water roared in his ears. A part of him thought if he could find a river or stream, then perhaps he could escape the darkness. The darkness. Oh yes, it was dark, but the doors were a brilliant white. They didn't just stand out in the shadows of this place, they glowed. He moved past them, unable or unwilling to touch them. They had no handles, and they reminded him of the priest's cubbies he'd once seen in an ancient monastery. Cells, they were. And then he was in a cell. The old toll booth. And outside, beyond the building's ancient walls, came calls for his execution. Disembodied voices shouted for his head on a pike. They were witnesses to his death. And he realised he was ready to give them what they wanted. He was tired, done, spent. Life had become a sorry burden, and for the first time in all his struggles, Mac was bloody exhausted from trying to hang on. He was once again on the wrong side, always on the wrong side. Then again, he was Irish. It was his nature to rebel, but not any longer. He wanted peace. More. "You must drink more." The command was clear. The woman's voice distinct. He He looked around the cell. She was not there. He was still alone, and yet he heard her again. "Another bit," she ordered. "A bit more, please. Do you understand me? You are making me angry, sir. If you don't eat, you'll die. Now please try." She was a bossy bit. And yet her voice was melodic and warm and concerned, anxious even. He saw himself open his mouth, wanting, yearning for the tenderness that only a woman could offer. Did they know how strong they were? How they could make a difference in the way a man saw the world? Mac had a fondness for women, all of them, young, old, feisty, and calm. They intrigued him. They teased him, and he enjoyed teasing them back. They were poetry and song in his life, but they were not meaningful. No woman had been meaningful after Moira. He wouldn't allow it. Moira had taken too much from him. "Mr. Enright, another spoonful, now." Instead of obeying, he tried to open his eyes. It took superhuman effort. He hadn't realised they were closed. It was as if he was lost in the depths of a dream. Light hurt his eyes, and his vision was not clear. Nor were his senses operating the way he expected. The analytical part of his brain, the physician in him, immediately registered how ill he was. His chest was heavy and his breathing laboured. He wanted to fall back into that peaceful obscurity. Still, he needed to see her face. "You are awake," she said, a sense of wonder in her voice. He struggled to focus, and slowly her features came into view. She was an angel. He should have known. And angels were just as lovely as his gran had claimed they'd be. Her hair was sable-rich, thick and curling. Strands of it hung around her face, as if it had become unpinned. She had crystal blue eyes and clear, creamy skin. There were freckles, the very faintest ones, across her nose. His angel smiled at him, but a tear escaped from her eye. "You must live," she told him. "You must fight hard." Yes, he had to fight hard. The Irish always fought hard. There was no easy path for them. His angel should know that. Mac wanted to reach up and touch her cheek, but he lacked strength. Indeed, his body was weighed down, his long legs stretched out. His gram had always called his legs his long jacks. "Hurry your long jacks," she would admonish him and his brother, urging them to quickly do her bidding. She'd feared laziness in either of them. She'd said their father had enough for the whole family. And Mac had wanted to please her. She'd been the one to tell him the story of his country, of myths and legend. "You have an angel watching over you, Cormac," she had told him. "Listen to her." An angel. Here she was, his Irish angel. And Mac felt himself murmur the words, although he said them too softly for her to hear. She leaned closer. "What?" He wanted to repeat himself, but he couldn't. He was drifting away again. He had to think, to breathe. He would tell her later. Mac returned to the hallway. That was good. He never wanted to see the inside of a prison cell again. The hall was deep, under the earth. He understood that now. Earlier, it had been unbearably hot. Now, he was chilled, shivering. Needing to find warmth, he approached one of the doors. He pressed his hand upon it, marvelling at the glow of light. The door swung open, and there was his gram. She was not alone. A girl sat at a spinning wheel, turning coarse wool into a silken cord. His gram stood over the lass, surveying her work. Gram smiled, and in her forthright manner said, "Come here, Cormac, tell me what you've been doing. I hear you've had adventures." Mac moved forward, not feeling of the earth, but not a part of this place either, not yet. He put his arms out to give his gram a loving hug, for some reason expecting them to go through her, but they didn't. She was solid, real. She nodded as if she understood his thoughts. "Come on, lad. Tell me a story. Make it a good one." He did his bid, and found himself telling her about the first time he'd met Gordana Rani, and how the girl had begged him to take her with him. She'd been afraid of a man she would not name. He'd forgotten that. He'd been deep into his cups at the moment, and so hadn't recalled until this moment with Graham. Gordana had told him she didn't want to be owned. He'd laughed and asked if she meant like a slave, and her answer had been, worse.
How could I have forgotten that? Mac asked his Graham. There are many things that lurk deep within us that we never remember, his Graham answered. Many things behind all of those doors out there.
Her patient was shaking so hard with the chills, the bed shook. Sabrina piled every blanket she could find upon him, including the counterpane she'd carried downstairs and the one off of her father's bed. She lit the fire in her hearth, something she rarely did. Finally, she'd added her own body heat, stretching out beside him. Only then did he start to calm down. And she fell asleep. When she woke, it was well into the middle of the night. The room was dark, save for the glowing embers from the fire, the door still open. Mr. Enright slept, his chest barely moving. Rolf, too, slept. He lay across the doorway and snored gently. Disoriented, Sabrina sat up and almost fell off the bed when she realised where she was and how neatly she had tucked herself in beside Mr. Enright's long body. She should have been more circumspect. And she shouldn't have found his presence so comfortable. Embarrassed, she stood and pushed her heavy hair back. Her pins were all hopelessly lost and her best dress wrinkled. She added some more fuel to the hearth and checked her patient. He was hot again, but not as burning to the touch as he'd been earlier. Good. Still, he had deep circles under his eyes, and his skin lacked colour and healthiness. She removed a few blankets, then realised she needed to return one to her father. By this hour, he must be home. She was surprised he had not noticed her door open, but she was thankful as well. Sometimes he could be very absent-minded, and so might not have noticed she had a man in her bed. Although, that didn't seem plausible. She decided she'd best explain before he discovered her with Mr. Enright. She also should shoo Rolf out of the house before he was discovered. Lighting a candle off of the fire, she sought out her father. "Come, Rolf," she ordered. "We need to scoot out of here before Father discovers you." Rolf rose and stretched, as if he understood. Sabrina walked to her father's room, ready to knock on the door and explain why his bed didn't have a blanket, but the door was still open. She held her candle high to take in the details of the room. Now she understood why her father had not woken her. He wasn't here. His bed was still made. For a second, she couldn't think. Her father had never not come home, except when he was away on business matters. If he had wanted to make it clear to her that he had chosen Mrs. Bosley over his daughter, he could have chosen no better way than to not come home. Sabrina dropped the blanket and backed away from the door. The hour had to be close to midnight. He was not returning. She knew it. He'd ridden off without a word to her, as if she did not matter in his life. Perhaps he'd been waylaid wherever he was. She overheard women complaining about their menfolk coming home late after hours spent in the public houses. Could her father have stopped for a drink and been distracted by his friends? "Why must I think he is with Mrs. Bosley?" Sabrina said to Rolf. The dog yawned, as if pointing out she was silly to believe otherwise. "He could have had an accident," Sabrina suggested, and began to worry. She thought about Mrs. Kinnean and her fears. Sabrina now understood and did a good job of convincing herself that her father must be in danger. She put the blanket on his bed and went downstairs. She had closed the back door earlier when she'd fetched her counterpane. She should move the cart back to the stables, but that task could wait for morning. Instead, she ate a bite of the dinner Mrs. Patton had left for them, then went into the sitting room to wait for her father. She distracted herself by practising on her pianoforte. She'd not put Rolf out. The dog's presence comforted her, and he seemed pleased to be there. After another hour had passed, Sabrina ladled more broth into Mr. Enright, closed her bedroom door, and returned to her lonely watch, perched on the upholstered chair nearest the front door in the sitting room. And there, as the first birds began chirping it was morning, she fell into the dreamless sleep of exhaustion. Sabrina woke to realise her head was tilted back and her mouth open. Her throat hurt from dryness. She sat up abruptly and realised she had fallen asleep in the sitting room chair. The morning was almost gone. Hazy sunlight streamed through the windows. She wondered why Mrs. Patton had not woken her, then remembered the cook would not be in today. Rolf was watching, his tail wagging. He looked hungry. She rose from the chair and went upstairs. The door to her father's room was still ajar. He'd not returned. Mr. Enright was better, his breathing easier, but he slept as if exhausted. In the morning light, his huge body appeared odd in her very feminine room, with its soft hues of greens, blues, and snowy white muslin. He also looked entirely peaceful, while she felt cranky over her father's disappearance and achy from a night spent in a chair. Even her eyes felt gritty. Rolf barked, a reminder that he still hadn't been fed. Dumpling must be impatient for his breakfast as well. Sabrina combed her hair back with her hands and tied it in a knot at the nape of her neck. 1 moment, Rolf, let me polish my teeth and wash my face, and I'll see to you. She pulled her serviceable brown day dress from its hook in the wardrobe and went to the guest room to change. About 15 minutes later, she headed down the stairs, feeling almost presentable. Rolf padded ahead of her, anxious for his breakfast. She needed to feed Rolf, move the cart from the back door, then see to Dumpling. Then she would consider the matter of having a complete stranger in her bed, and no relative to provide a proper chaperone. Or did that matter any more? After all, they called her the spinster Davidson because they assumed she would never marry, and she probably wouldn't. Mr. Enright was a patient, nothing more, nothing less. It had been years since she'd needed a chaperone. And if her father was too busy cavorting with the widow Bosley to worry about appearances, well, she had to do what she had to do. Indeed, just let him say something. Any contriteness Sabrina had felt over their argument yesterday was now gone. It was rude of her father to leave without a word, and so she would tell him. A knock on the front door interrupted her dark thoughts. Sabrina frowned. She was not expecting a guest. She crossed to a front window and looked out. Dame Agatha stood on her front step. She was dressed for calling in a dove grey dress, gloves and a hat. Even the feather in the hat was grey. Her driver walked the horses on the road in front of the house. The dame had never condescended to pay a call on the Davidson household, and Sabrina was not going to let her cool her heels on the front step. She opened the door. Dame Agatha had been gazing across the lawn in the direction of the bridge. She now turned and smiled, the expression slightly acerbic, like her personality. "Good morning, Miss Davidson. I hope it is not too early to call." She didn't wait for a response, but walked right through the door and into the sitting room, pausing in the front hall long enough to notice Rolf and comment, "A dog? I don't let dogs in my house." "Some people do, some don't," Sabrina responded, and shooed the hungry Rolf out the front door. She followed Dame Agatha. "I'm so happy for your visit. May I offer you refreshment? Mrs. Patton is not here today, but I'm certain there are scones in the pantry and sweet butter, and I can put on water to boil. Or would you prefer sherry?" "This early in the day?" the dame asked, interrupting her. "Please, Miss Davidson, my constitution would not allow it." "Of course, how silly of me." "And this is not a social call," the dame continued, standing as if she were posing for a portrait titled "Haughty Lady Beside Pianoforte." "I wish to talk of what happened yesterday." Sabrina stiffened.
"Are you speaking of the ladies' quarterly meeting?"
"And you're leaving in an unexpected, hurried manner." This was not a conversation Sabrina wanted.
"Unfortunately, Dame Agatha, now is not a good time for a visit, social or not. You will excuse me, please."
Sabrina moved to the door to open it and hurry her guest out as quickly as she had Rolf. However, the dame's next word stopped her in her tracks. "You will accept Lillian Bosley as your stepmother, and you will do it gracefully."
Slowly, Sabrina faced her. "And if I don't?"
"Then life might become lonely for you in this valley, Miss Davidson," Dame Agatha said. "Very lonely." Chapter 6. A flare of temper,
wild and almost uncontrollable, shot through Sabrina. Her father and Mrs. Bosley were sending Dame Agatha to threaten her. There could be no other explanation. Her father was ensconced in his lady's boudoir, and Sabrina was expected to accept the situation and pretend to like it, to push all her natural and right sensibilities aside for his pleasure. He'd always held her to a high standard. He'd chastised her to not be like her cousins, the Earl's daughters. Eileen had scandalised London when she'd been divorced, and Tara was known for her vanity and for being headstrong. Sabrina had been expected to be a paragon, and her father hadn't given a care for what such loyalty, such devotion had cost her. Her smile grew brittle. "I don't see how this is your affair," she informed the dame. The older woman blinked as if startled by Sabrina's bluntness. And why should she not be? Always before, Sabrina had kept her tongue in check. However, this was different. This was her life. So Sabrina stood her ground, head high, shoulders back. Unfortunately, Dame Agatha was doing the same, and she had a great deal more experience of it. "You must understand, Miss Davidson, that Lily and I are old friends. She is a good person." Sabrina remained quiet. She knew the dame would not like her response. Dame Agatha crossed to the door as if she considered the battle won. "Your father and my friend will marry. If you keep your wits about you and behave, then all will be well."
"And what if I kick up a fuss? What if I speak my mind?"
Speech gave her courage.
"Mrs. Bosley has informed me that I might find myself in a very difficult place in the household. I am thinking that no matter what I do, there won't be enough room under this roof for both of us."
"You are strong-willed women," Dame Agatha agreed. "Unfortunately, you are the unmarried one."
"And someone to be pitied?"
"Or foisted off onto other relatives unless you can find a willing but awkward gentleman to marry you." The dame's words were a direct reference to Mrs. Kinnean, and Sabrina's temper was outrage, especially since she didn't want to be considered in the same class.
"I was my mother's caretaker. I believe I have earned my keep and my father's respect."
Dame Agatha waved a dismissive hand. "Oh, yes, that is true, but life moves on. It is a sad fact. You have nothing to win, girl, by being difficult," she explained, her tone not unkind. "Your father and Lily are in love. People will be sympathetic to them. They will even forgive all the times that Lily has been, well, shall we say, a bit too ahead of herself."
"Which is a good reason for my father to avoid her. He would expect the same of me if our positions were reversed."
"Ah, but love has its ways," Dame Agatha said. "If you'd ever been in love, you would know."
"Who says I have not been in love?" Sabrina countered. "Why does everyone assume I have no experience in life? Years ago, a young man, Daniel Burnett, was visiting the parish, and he asked my father's permission to call on me."
"And?"
"And father said no. He said Burnett wasn't the proper sort. Ironic, isn't it?"
Dame Agatha made an impatient sound. "Men are different from women. Your father was looking after your welfare."
"Well, I am looking after his. It is too soon for father to remarry."
"You would say that of anyone he chose." Dame Agatha's voice had softened. "I understand that this will not be easy for you, especially in light of the many financial difficulties you've had." She held up a hand to stop the protest Sabrina was about to utter. "Don't pretend. We all know that your uncle has your father under his thumb, and we sympathise, which is another reason a match between Lily and your father is good. Lily's husband left her very well off."
"So we overlook the transgressions?"
"Your father wishes to do so." Dame Agatha took a step toward her. "You are a proud woman, Miss Davidson, so proud you've put up a wall between yourself and others." This statement sent Sabrina stuttering.
"A wall? Why, I'm out and about more than any other woman in this valley."
"Oh, yes, doing your charity work. You're so busy offering advice here and giving your time that you haven't given a thought to living your own life. You act as if you are afraid to consider your wants and needs. However, if you don't change, Miss Davidson, you are in danger of being alone forever."
Her words struck a deep, uncomfortable chord inside Sabrina.
You speak as if I have power over my fate. I don't. You must understand, my mother was very ill.
For a very long time, Dame Agatha chimed in. I know, and I'm sorry for it. Her life was not what she'd wished. However, and I'm sorry if this offends you, I believe it was wrong for your parents to ask such a sacrifice of you. You should not have been asked to give up your prospects to care for your mother.
Who else would have cared for her? Father? Sabrina asked, her throat suddenly tight.
Dame Agatha sounded as if she had not approved. The dame pounced on the suggestion.
Aye, he could have hired someone and let his daughter have the chance at a full life. Instead, he expected you to give up your opportunities, and here you are.
How old are you, my dear?
Too old, Sabrina managed to whisper, her whole sense of herself shaken. Never once had she questioned what her parents had expected of her until now.
You don't sound as if you admire my father, she responded.
I see his faults. Lillian does as well, so I've reconciled myself to this marriage, and you should too. Live, Miss Davidson. Take hold of your own life.
But that was easier said than done in the cloister of the valley where everyone had expectations of her. Or had she cloistered herself? Honesty ran deep in Sabrina. There was a challenge to Dame Agatha's words, a challenge that hit upon Sabrina's fears, her doubts. She thought of Mrs. Kinyon, who had been in the uncomfortable position of being at the dame's beck and call.
Is this the same lecture you gave the Reverend's wife?
If the dame heard the challenge in Sabrina's tone, she didn't take offence.
Bertie was born to be a church mouse. I despaired of ever making her discontent with her lot in life. She'd have hidden out under my care forever. But I believe she is happy now.
And she was. Everyone knew that the Kinyons had a good marriage, and Sabrina was surprised with the knowledge that Dame Agatha had been deliberately contrite to her niece. All that being content was not to be desired.
I am not hiding, Sabrina said in her defence. I've never been the sort to attract attention. I'm not like my cousins.
Pfft,
Dame Agatha said, rejecting Sabrina's protest with that obnoxious sound.
You are a handsome woman. You could have had lads. I've watched many a time as the local boys have worked up their courage at the dances to ask you for a turn around the floor, but you hide behind your music.
I have not noticed anyone looking at me.
Because you don't allow yourself to be vulnerable.
Dame Agatha pressed her gloved hand against her heart.
Is it that you fear what others think of you and your choices? Or are you one of these women who expect a man to be perfect? I'll warn you now, there isn't one of them that is. They all have their peculiarities. You may scorn Lily, but she is always open and willing. She has been hurt from time to time. The Earl of Tay is a randy fool, to my way of thinking, but I also know he lost the opportunity to have a woman in his life who would have been good for him.
If my uncle used her, it is because she allowed him to do so.
It happens,
Dame Agatha replied with a shrug.
But if Lily followed your line of reasoning and hid behind her pride...
I'm not that proud.
Oh, but you are, Miss Davidson. You are. And if Lily had been like you, then she wouldn't have met a man who does appreciate her, your father.
Sabrina wanted to reject her argument, but a new thought caught her off guard. She hadn't been that upset all those years ago when her father had denied Mr. Burnett permission to call on her. She did have enough spirit that she would have challenged him. However, Mr. Burnett hadn't intrigued her, not the way Mr. Enright interested her. Immediately, she wanted to strike such an idea from her mind. The idea that she could be attracted to him was ridiculous. They had barely spoken to each other. He was ill, a soul in need of care. And another bit of charity to keep her mind off living her life. For the first time, Sabrina realised that she'd adopted the hurt her mother had confided she'd felt when her husband had spared his wife only 15 minutes each day. Her mother had believed she had become an encumbrance, a duty, an obligation. And she was. The thought had filled her with guilt. And now Sabrina realised she had spent her life trying to prove she could earn her worth. that she had a meaningful place in her father's life.
Dear God, Dame Agatha was right. I see I have given you a thing or two to consider, Dame Agatha said. It is fine with me if you wish to remain alone. I do, and am happy for it. My husband made the Earl of Tay appear a saint. I live a good life, but I live fully. I'm not worried what others believe of me.
She moved into the hall and placed her gloved hand on the door handle.
Give your blessing to a marriage between Mrs. Bosley and your father, Miss Davidson. You will find in Lillian a special friend. And I think you need one.
On those last words, she opened the door and let herself out. Slowly, Sabrina sank into the closest sitting-room chair. With the dame's departure, the room, indeed the whole house, seemed to have lost an energy, a vitality. Sabrina looked over at the sherry decanter, tempted to pour herself a full glass. What if the dame was even partly right? What if Sabrina released herself from the task of worrying about others? And always doing the right thing? Her heart skipped a panicked beat. Did she know herself well enough to know what she wanted? She never once thought to be anyone other than who she was. Outside, their visitor gone, Rolf barked, reminding her that he had not been fed. There was a bone in the pantry with his name on it, and, well, he knew it. Sabrina imagined that Dumpling was also pawing for his breakfast as well. She threw on an apron and started her chores, but her mind still worked on her conversation with the dame. Introspection was something Sabrina had believed she practiced. Dame Agatha had proven her wrong. It was not introspection to just make excuses for oneself, and Sabrina realized she developed quite a habit of it. Now that the lid had been taken off the kettle, so to speak, what did she want to do with this new perspective? What could she do? Time had passed her by. The decent lads who had once admired her were married and gone. The ones left were available for a reason. The opportunities she'd shied away from would never come her way again. Such thoughts.